Hare
The kirtan in the park was the most beautiful sight Linda had ever seen. The dancers were swaying back and forth, their arms raised against the open sky, and in the middle of the dance was a dark, gray-haired, wise person sitting and chanting. As she moved in closer, she began to sway with the devotees. Then she sat down and started chanting, wanting to find out what was going on. After more than an hour of chanting, the elderly leader finally stopped the kirtan, and Linda began talking to some of the devotees. Although the Swami had slipped away, some of the followers had remained, handing out flyers and invitations to the Sunday love feast, and picking up the timpani and the flags. One of them asked her to come with them to the temple. Linda found the devotees to be something like hippies, but not scruffy street people like most of the hippies she had met. Right? They took a bath. Right? But it was, you know, this inviting people over the temple. That was very common. You meet somebody on the street, you talk to them, you're going to the temple. They say, why don't you come? You just take them back to the temple. So it was pretty standard. They were attractive, not repellent. Madrasas and plants decorated their little storefront temple. When she stopped before a painting of people singing and dancing, one of the devotees said, "This is Lord Chaitanya and his associates." A devotee gave her some prasadam, and Linda left that night without meeting the Swami. The next day, however, at 7 in the morning, she returned, eager for another chance to see him. She thought he had noticed her at the park and might remember her. She had made a drawing of him, and she wanted to show him. That morning, as Prabhupada chanted prayers and led kirtan, Linda didn't take her eyes off him. And when he asked everyone to chant Krishna, Hare Krishna, with him on beads, she excitedly accepted a strand from one of the devotees and tried to chant like him. Then he began reading the Sanskrit verse to begin his lecture, and Linda was captivated by the sound. If she were to continue with a graduate program in Greek, she would study Sanskrit next. So she listened with keen interest, proud that perhaps no one else in the room could understand as well as she, right? Because she had studied Greek, you know, something like that. Later that same morning, she met Srila Prabhupada upstairs in his apartment, Linda. In the first conversation I had with him, Swamiji summed up Greek civilization for me in a couple of sentences. He explained that Srimad Bhagavatam was the source of stories like the Iliad and the Odyssey, and was the source of Platonic philosophy. I was thrilled. Of course, I believed him. I knew that whatever he was speaking was the truth. There was no doubt in my mind. And he didn't discourage my love for Socrates. He told me that Socrates was actually a devotee in disguise. Then he began telling me the story of Krishna as the butter thief, and I said, oh yes, I know that story. I saw a dance about Krishna as the butter thief. He was very pleased and laughed, and he said, oh yes, you know. Yeah, his Platonic philosophy basically is that there's an absolute truth, right? And we have to adjust our life with the absolute truth, because the absolute truth is, you know, what is going on in the whole creation. So then, if we want to live our life properly, then we have to adjust to the absolute, right? It wasn't a very popular thing at the time, you know, the modern culture at the time. Then their idea was, they define absolute truth. What the people say, that's absolute truth, right? That was what they were. So they didn't appreciate his philosophy like that. So Prabhupada said he's like a hidden devotee. Right? You know what it means? In other words, either he was a devotee and was just keeping that hidden, it was just preaching what people could deal with, or then hidden meaning that it was, you know, very close but not quite there. But, you know, as close as, you know, as anyone, you know, would see in the Western and the philosophy, like that. Right. And here, and then, first meaning, not discouraging his love for Socrates, because he's a philosopher, he's studying the absolute truth, he's contemplating, he's teaching, he's, you know, so all, you know, good qualities. So now it's just a matter of taking those qualities and connecting those to Krishna. Right? That's what one wants to do. Otherwise, then, you know, what's the use? So wherever you're situated, you start there and connect those qualities to Krishna. What do you think? Right? Just like your head. Right? We start with this big kind of like fuzzy ball, right? And then, we don't get rid of the fuzzy ball, right? We keep the fuzzy ball, right? But then we try to bring it in line with Krishna, right? Does that make sense? Right? So then we go to Gulam, we get a brick, nice, and then we polish the top until it becomes nice and shiny. Right? And then no more fuzzy. Right? Because one has to remember, Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear. Yes? But Fuzzy Wuzzy had no hair. You have hair. So this is the problem. Yes? Makes sense? Yes, that's the problem, right? When that makes sense, you know there's a problem. Okay. This encounter with Swamiji was like meeting an old friend, because I felt completely at home and protected, and I felt I had found what I was looking for. Here I could use my intelligence and ask the questions I had always wanted to ask in school. Yeah, because no one would, how you say? These professors, they know the Greek philosophy, but it's not their philosophy. It's just something they know. It's like facts and figures, you know. But, how you say? So then when she actually had real questions about how you apply it in your life, this, that, that's not what they're doing, right? Professor is just, that's his area of interest, so he's quite expert at it. And you want to know more about his area of interest or be interested yourself, that they can teach you. But if you actually want to apply that knowledge in your life, then generally there's a problem. Right? Yes? No? You know, so the questions of life, how to live, what are standards, goals, you know, real, that, then they can't really answer. So now this is the first time she's found this. Prabhupada initiated Linda, giving her the name Lilavati. Seeing her eagerness to serve him personally, he decided to teach her to cook by having her prepare his lunch. Like that. I don't know if you've ever seen some of these old, very old movies, like a Los Angeles Kirtans. And there's one of them where everybody's, I think it's an Arctic, everybody's standing, dancing, jumping and all that. But there's a lady sitting back by Prabhupada's Vyasasan on the floor playing a harmonium, and she's actually leading the kirtan. You ever seen that? No?
No.
Oh, well, if you see that, that's Lilavati. He already had a little weekend cooking class in which he taught Janaki, Govindadasi, Nandarani, and others the art of cooking for Krishna. Now he invited Lilavati to come. He would walk back and forth in the small room, showing the girls how to knead dough, cook chapatis, measure spices in the right palm, and cut vegetables and cook them in ghee with masala. The foods were basic, rice, chapatis, cauliflower with potatoes, but he wanted to teach the girls precisely how to cook. Mukunda, one day out of curiosity, I went to witness Swamiji's cooking classes, so I came in and stood at the doorway to Swamiji's kitchen. The women were there learning how to cook, and Swamiji said to me, "What are you doing?" "Oh," I said, "I just came to see my wife." Then Swamiji said, "Are you going back to Godhead or back to wife?" Everyone was amused, and I realized I wasn't welcome, so I left. Right? Because they're there learning to cook, and he's just there, you know, seeing what his wife's doing. So it's like, you know, he can go do something else. Back to Godhead or back to wife. So measuring the spices in the right palm, because you put them in and so you can see how much is there, like that, because you get the spice, you see it in your hand, then you know, then you put it in, right? Because otherwise, you know, unless it's a smaller amount, you're just taking a little bit here, but otherwise you get it in this, in your palm, and you can measure there, you know, unless it's really big, you know, you're putting in this much jeera or something, you know, then more of a difficulty. Yes? But don't worry, for you, it won't be a problem at all, right? See, because that much jeera is quite heavy. But it's not really any heavier than the brick, right? And so after you take this brick and you rub it on your head, then you'll become very strong, right? Then it'll be easy for you to pick up big amounts of jeera, you know, and put them into the pot, right? So don't worry. It'll work. Yes? What do you think? Yes, he agrees. See, very intelligent. Shaved head, so his head's cool, right? So the brain is working, right? You know, like that. Too much hair is hot. Like the other day I saw him, he's walking around and he gets the pots of water and puts on his head. It's just water dripping down his head. And I said, what's going on? He says, hot. Hot. See, so then that's hot head, and this is cool head, right? So very smart. So you want to be a hot head or a cool head? Cool head, yeah. So then you got to do something about the fuzzy wuzzy on the top. You understand? The point is it was fuzzy, but it's not anymore. Right? Does that make sense? So we're looking for wuzzy fuzzy, not fuzzy wuzzy. Yes? Got it? Yeah? Okay. And what do you think? Huh? Yes. Okay. The incident made me reflect on Swamiji's seriousness. For one thing, I learned that I should not be so attached to my wife. And secondly, I learned that his relationship with the women and what he was teaching them was actually very sacred, not like the sometimes frivolous association between husband and wife. Because he spent many hours in the kitchen teaching them, they were very inspired. Yeah, because it means whatever you're doing, you focus. So he's in the kitchen, so he's doing that nicely. Right, he's doing kirtan, he's focused on that, class, he focuses on that, whatever he's doing, and that's the focus. So here he's thinking, you know, oh, what's going on? You know, he had nothing to do, his wife's in the kitchen, so let's go check out what's going on. But he didn't come to the kitchen to say, can I learn, can I help? You know, he could have done something, wash pots or cut vegetables. No, he just wanted to come hang out and see, you know, and the reason would be is because, you know, he had nothing to do and his wife was in the kitchen. If his wife wasn't in the kitchen, probably he would have thought of something else to do to pass the time. Right? like that. So then Prabhupada's point is, no, they're here learning cooking, and this is the point. It's not hang out and just have a good time. They're actually there to learn seriously how to cook. Yes? Lilavati tended to be proud. Many of the devotees were not college graduates, and none of them were classical scholars. She sometimes typed for Swamiji, did his wash, or brought flowers to his room in the morning. And he had quickly chosen her to be his exclusive cook. Only after a few days of cooking lessons, Swamiji had told her, "All right, you cook." And now he came in only occasionally to check on her. Once when he saw her rolling chapatis, he said, "Oh, you have learned very nicely." Right? In other words, they were round, right? Square. Or something. What do you think? Square chapatis? Right? Means what square is like choco, right? So then chopati, choco, like this, you know, square, right? No? Then? Round is gold. But it's chapati, not gold. So why it should be round? Why not square? Okay. You don't know.
Pati means flat.
Pati means flat. So a four-cornered flat piece of bread.
Cho means round.
Cho means round. I see. Cho, what does cho mean? In Chinese, there's no cho. Gotta be a cho. Any cho? Cho? No? Well, I mean, you have four ways. It could be cho. Cho? Cho? Huh? No good. Means no good. So, then if it's not round, it's no good, right? So then, okay. Okay. Very good. Yes? You like that translation. It's okay. Preparing Swamiji's meal just right, with the proper spicing, without burning anything, and on time was a challenge. By the time Lilavati finished, she would be perspiring and even crying from tension. But when she brought in his lunch, he would ask her to bring an empty plate, and he would serve her portions from his own plate and invite her to eat with him. For the first few days, Lilavati made remarks about the wonderful taste of the prasadam, and Swamiji would smile or raise his eyebrows. But then she noticed that he never spoke while eating, but seemed to be concentrating intensely as he ate, cross-legged, bending his body over the plate of prasadam and eating with his right hand. One day on Ekadasi, because Prabhupada generally always ate alone. Sometimes he had programs he'd eat and this and that, you know, very cultured and that. But generally speaking, if he was in the temple, it was a regular time, he'd always eat alone like that. Because then he could just concentrate on prasad, take nicely, you know, you don't have to worry about the conversation. Who's going to talk about, yeah, you know, how much mucus they had in their nose. You know, all kinds of, you know, wonderful topics that somehow or another always seem to come up at prasad if people aren't properly trained and stuff like that. Right? No? What? Why, you were just discussing that the other day, right? Okay. One day on Ekadasi, Lilavati arrived late at Swamiji's apartment, thinking there would not be much cooking on a fast day. But when she entered the kitchen, she found Swamiji himself busy cooking. He was heating something white in a skillet. Skillet means a flat pan with a handle, like that. Vigorously stirring and scraping it from the bottom of the pan. "Oh," he said, "I was just wondering, where is that girl?" Lilavati was too shy to ask what Swamiji was doing, so she simply busied herself cutting vegetables. "Today is a fast day," she said, as if chiding Swamiji for cooking. "You have to understand," he replied. "In Krishna consciousness, a fast day means a feast day. We are offering this to Krishna." Right? Because that's Prabhupada's point. It's for Krishna, so we're making nice there. And since Krishna's eaten nice prasad, then we take the remnants. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the emphasis is on his connection to Krishna. The idea is the fasting is then you have more time, right? I'm not distracted by the eating, or after eating you have to go to sleep or go to the toilet or this or that, or you know, there's 20 people there, only one toilet. You know, all these things that are very distracting. So then one to use that time for chanting and reading and all that. But here Prabhupada's point is you just directly go to remembering Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? Lilavati continued to keep her distance from Swamiji's whitish, sticky-looking preparation until he completed it and placed it on the windowsill to cool. Later, it will harden, he said, and we can cut it and serve it. And with that, he turned and walked out of the kitchen. When Lilavati finished cooking and served Swamiji's Ekadasi lunch, he asked her to bring him some of that thing on the windowsill. He took a bite, seemed pleased, and asked Lilavati to call Mukunda and Janaki to taste it. Janaki took a bite and exclaimed, "It's wonderful, simply wonderful, incredible, what is this?" Turning to Lilavati, Swamiji asked, "What is in this preparation?" "I don't know, Swamiji," she said. "You don't know," he replied. "You were standing right by me in the kitchen and you don't remember?" Lilavati's face turned red. "Oh, Swamiji," Lilavati replied, "I was very busy. I just didn't see." Right? Because she was not expecting the cook coming, then the cooking was going on, you know, and all that. So she was embarrassed, so she went to do something else, and you know, like this. "Oh, you are busy without intelligence," he replied. And he laughed for a long time. Until Mukunda was also laughing. Lilavati felt even more humiliated. Right, in other words, it's been said, but it's been said, you know. Swamiji asked Janaki if she could tell what was in the preparation. She couldn't, except that it was sweet. He then sent Lilavati downstairs to get Govindadasi and Gaurasundar. When they entered, Swamiji told Lilavati, "Get some more of that simply wonderful thing." Again, this time in front of four devotees, Swamiji asked Lilavati, "So, what is in this preparation?" He's not letting it go here, right? And again, she defended herself. She had been too busy to notice. And again, he laughed until everyone was laughing with him. He then asked Govindadasi to taste the simply wonderful and say what was in it. Immediately she guessed, sugar, butter, and powdered milk. Right, so it seems Janaki, the name is based off of what Janaki said. Okay. So she said it. Immediately she guessed, sugar, butter, and powdered milk. Oh, Swamiji looked at Lilavati. She is an artist. She is intelligent. To Lilavati, the whole episode was a devastating ordeal. Only later did she understand that Swamiji had been trying to teach her humility, right? Because she was proud, because she was a postgraduate, studied classical literature, you know, knew Greek, you know, these kind of things. And so she considered herself actually, you know, better situated than the other devotees. She learned cooking very quickly. Very quickly she was, you know, cooking for Prabhupada and doing service and stuff like that. But at the same time, she was proud. So then Prabhupada was then trying to make her not proud. It was 7 a.m. Srila Prabhupada sat on his dais in the temple. Beside him, on an altar, stood the recently acquired statue of Krishna. The child Krishna stood 2 feet high, with his left hand on his hip, his right hand holding a rod. Gurudas had found him at an import store and had begged the manager to sell him. And after several visits, the man had agreed for $35. Prabhupada had given him the name Kartami Shai, which means the boss. This morning, as Prabhupada and Kartami Shai looked out at the devotees in the room, only about six people were present. The night before, the temple had been crowded. I think this Kartami Shai is in Los Angeles. As you come into the temple, used to be like a front area before going into the actual temple room. Did you say something? No. You press there, then the top won't pop off or something. Just be careful. The press here might come out over here or something. Let's see what happened to him. He was pushing him too much. You have to be careful. See, he's careful. He's not touching his head. See? Where are the others? Prabhupada asked. And then he gave the answer himself. They are sleeping. All this sleeping is not good. He took out his kartals and began playing the 1-2-3 rhythm. Mukunda took up a mridanga and played along, trying to execute the rhythm Srila Prabhupada had recently taught him. Srila Prabhupada had not even begun singing when the door opened and half a dozen barefoot hippies wandered in, reeking of marijuana. They glanced around and sat down on the floor with the devotees as Prabhupada began singing Guru Vastakam, the Vaishnava prayers to the spiritual master. Although none of his disciples knew the words, they loved to listen to Swamiji sing these morning prayers. Unhurriedly, he sang each verse, several times repeating each line, deliberately developing the mood of the unadulterated service to the spiritual master. Because there, Prabhupada, he would sing some kind of invocation, from here. Guru Vastakam, or this Vandeham, or different kinds of things he would sing as an invocation. So six songs of the six Goswamis. Then after that, then he would start singing Hare Krishna, like that. So, and he would do this all in raga and everything like that. Somehow or another, devotees never quite caught it. Then one of the hippies, a boy with long straight blonde hair and a red headband, began mumbling, fidgeting, and moaning. Someone softly asked him to be quiet. The boy paused, but then moaned again. Swamiji and his followers were used to drugged hippies who stayed up all night and came to the morning program, sometimes disrupting things. Usually the visitors remained submissive, and even if they occasionally called out in a strange mood, they usually found peace in chanting Hare Krishna and would try to blend in with the energy of the devotees. But today's discordant visitor seemed agitated by the chanting, as if it were challenging him. Rather, he sounded like he was challenging it. The devotees began clapping in time with Prabhupada's kartals, and when Prabhupada began singing Hare Krishna, his half dozen followers immediately joined him, chanting both lead and chorus. They just sing, all the time. Prabhupada looked at them gravely, encouraging the bedraggled early morning band of youngsters, and they responded determinedly. Oh, bedraggled. No, bedraggled. Yeah, bedraggled. Bedraggled is kind of like, it's a bit sloppy. It's not really... The guests sat in drugged contemplation, although one or two tried singing along. But the blonde boy with the red headband remained adamantly disharmonious, moaning defiantly as if trying to throw off the effects of the chanting. Nonetheless, despite the boy's moaning, which was sometimes loud and savage, Prabhupada kept singing and the devotees kept chanting. Mukunda and Hayagriva exchanged anxious glances but tolerated the boy, unsure of what else to do. Some of the devotees were disturbed and even frightened, but they had also heard Swamiji say in recent lectures that advanced devotees aren't shaken in any circumstances. Swamiji was their leader, not only in devotional prayers, but also in how to respond to this intruder. So they waited and watched him for a sign. Prabhupada remained undisturbed. But although after 20 minutes the kirtan was strong and determined, the blonde boy's madness was not going away. As the chanting built up momentum, he became more agitated. He screamed like a lost soul and hollered like a rock singer. He was becoming more and more troubled and angry. When the devotees rose to their feet and began dancing, the boy began dancing too, but in his own way, crying and pounding his chest. Mukunda played louder on the drum. The sounds were discordant, a clash of individual madness and group chanting, until Prabhupada finally brought the kirtan to a close. The devotees bowed their heads to the floor and Srila Prabhupada intoned the Sanskrit prayers honoring the spiritual masters, the Supreme Lord and the sacred places. How glorious to the assembled devotees, he said. He'd say Jayadwani. They responded, Hare Krishna, all glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna, all glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna, thank you very much, Prabhupada said. And then, as was his morning custom, he announced, chant one round. Everyone sat down, including the crazy hippie. Devotees put aside the drums and kartals, reached for their large red beads, and began chanting japa in unison. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Fingering one bead at a time, they uttered the mantra, then proceeded to the next bead. Surprised at this turn of events, the blonde boy commented loudly, far out. As rapid chanting filled the room, the boy jumped to his feet and shouted, come with me. He whirled about, facing Srila Prabhupada and howled, I am God. Then he began screaming long, loud, berserk cries. Oh, ah, ooh, woe, ah, ooh, ah, ooh. Yeah. Standard chant that God makes, right? He sobbed, growled, grumbled, stomped his feet like a small child. He explored every sound his voice could make. Beating his fists on his chest again and again, he cried, I am God. And one of the boy's friends suddenly played a few notes on a pan pipe. But Srila Prabhupada kept chanting japa. And the devotees also tried to continue chanting undaunted, while at the same time keeping an eye on the madmen and wondering where it would all end. Then, with a final violent ejaculation, the boy shrieked, I am God, and in anger and disgust strode out of the room, slamming the door behind him, yelling as he ran down the street, right? Because, he's God and nobody cared, He came, he yelled, he screamed, he tried everything he could, like that, and nobody cared. So then he got upset and left. So lesson to learn is that when you're in front of God, pay attention to God, right? Otherwise, he might go away. Right? So, yes? Yes, no? The proper japa peacefully engulfed the storefront, and Srila Prabhupada's voice assumed its place more clearly above the voices of all the chanting devotees. After about 10 minutes of chanting, Prabhupada recited, Sarvatma snaparam param vijayate Sri Krishna sankirtanam. Let there be all glory to the congregational chanting of Hare Krishna, which cleanses the dirt from the mirror of the mind and gives a taste of this nectar for which we are always hankering. As Prabhupada put on his spectacles and opened the Bhagavad Gita, he had been speaking each morning on the sixth chapter. The room settled and became silent for hearing his lecture. His students, some of whom had been imbibing his instructions for more than 2 months, listened attentively as he spoke the eternal parampara message. It was Krishna's timeless message, yet Swamiji was presenting it just for them as they sat on the rug early in the morning in the small storefront, 518. 518 Frederick Street in Haight-Ashbury. Prabhupada lectured on the transmigration of the soul. Foolish people, he said, aspire for material acquisitions. They do not know that these things are finished with the death of the body. Spiritual life, however, is of the utmost importance because it is never lost. So even if Krishna consciousness becomes inconvenient or uncomfortable, one should never give it up. Right? So no matter what, because devotional service is actually the position, that's actually the nature of the soul. So that should always be practiced. Right? So that should never be given up. Right? In other words, it's not, see, more complete. It's not that you would, you know, take this brick and, you know, rub all your hair off just to have a cool head. Right? Well, the reason that one keeps shaved head is because Krishna likes it, right? This is how the Brahmins dress and everything like that. No? Otherwise, it might get too materialistic. You're only interested in being cool, so that kind of thing. Yeah. No? Maybe. Right. So this importance, in other words, devotional service is the main thing. Then, if there's any other duties to perform, material duties, then they're done in connection with Krishna. So they're considered secondary. Right? Doesn't mean they may not be done, but they're secondary. But prime importance is that devotional service. So one's not overly hankering and absorbed in material things. Otherwise, one will be distracted. No? Yes? Srila Prabhupada is again stressing that devotee is never disturbed, a point he seemed especially relevant in the wake of this morning's interruption. A devotee, Prabhupada explained, is always tolerant. Prabhupada told a story about the great devotee Haridas Thakur, a contemporary of Lord Chaitanya's, who endured severe beating at the hands of a Muslim magistrate. As Prabhupada told the story, he improvised dialogue. "Oh," the magistrate said to Haridas, "you are born in such a nice family, and you are chanting Hare Krishna." And then Prabhupada spoke for Haridas. "Yes, sir, many Hindus also have become Mohammedan. So if some Mohammedan becomes Hindu, what is the harm?" Prabhupada didn't change the pitch or accent of his voice while talking different parts of the dialogue. But with a subtle storyteller's art, each voice became a distinct person, right? Does that make sense? So that's always the nicest, is if you're telling stories, don't change your voice and all that. You just tell it nicely. Otherwise, then you see some devotees and tell you they try to change it so much, and then it, you know, then to try to make one each unique, so then they end up with all these very strange voices like that. Does that make sense? It's how you tell it. You can tell by the intonation, by the words used, how it's presented. Then you can tell the difference between the parts. No? The magistrate spoke threateningly. "Oh, you are arguing?" Then Prabhupada became the narrator. "So it was decided that Haridas was to be punished. Give the dog a bad name and hang it." Then Prabhupada became Haridas's floggers, who, despite repeatedly beating Haridas, were unable to make him cry out in pain. Finally, exhausted, they spoke up. "Sir, the idea was that you would die, but now we see you do not die. So now punishment is awaiting us. Haridas, what do you want?" The floggers: "We want that you should die." Narrator: "Then he played himself into samadhi, and the floggers brought him to the magistrate." The magistrate: "Throw him in the water. Don't put him in the graveyard. He has become Hindu." Srila Prabhupada concluded his tale. The others were flogging him, and he was chanting, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare." He was undisturbed. He was steady. Therefore, Lord Krishna says that a person who is spiritually advanced, for him there is no misery. even in this world, and what to speak of the other world. A devotee suffers no loss, Prabhupada explained. Even if he doesn't become perfectly Krishna conscious, or even if he falls away, his next birth also will be human. There was a prince, Prabhupada began a story to illustrate his point. His name was Satyavan, but he was to die at a certain age, his horoscope said. But one girl named Savitri, she fell in love with that boy. Now she wanted to marry. Her father told him, he'll die at a certain age, you don't marry. But she was bent, she married. In course of time, the boy died, say after 4 or 5 years, and the girl became widow. But she was so staunch lover, she wouldn't let the dead body go away. And the Yamaraj, what is the English for one who takes away the body of the soul after death? So he came to take the soul away. So this chaste girl would not allow the husband's body to go away. By Prabhupada's voice and widening eyes, he appeared as Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, speaking to the widow Savitri. It is my duty that I should take. You give it up. Otherwise, you'll also be punished. The girl gave up her husband, but followed behind Yamaraj. Then Prabhupada's Yamaraj, by a slight dropping of his voice, became compassionate. My dear girl, you go home. I give you benediction that you will have a son. Don't cry for your husband. But Savitri continued to follow Yamaraj. Yamaraj said, why are you following me? Then Prabhupada Savitri spoke, not in a feminine voice, but with the resonating reasoning and heart of Savitri. Now you are taking my husband. How can I have my son? Prabhupada spoke as a narrator. Oh, then he was in a dilemma. He returned her husband. So similarly, there is a technique. If you take to Krishna consciousness, then your husband or this human form of life is guaranteed. Right? Because then it's through that environment that one is able to become God conscious. Right? Because the whole idea is the husband's protector and creates the environment in which then one can develop. So then in this case, then the thing, the soul is the feminine and the body then is the masculine, because that creates the protection of the environment for the soul to be able to perform activities. Right? So if you take up devotional service, then there'll always be husband. The devotees understood the gist of the story, but they weren't perfectly clear what their lives had to do with the woman in the story. Some, however, understood. If they took to Krishna consciousness, their ill-destined lives would become auspicious. Yes, Srila Prabhupada continued, a spiritual life is the most auspicious life. He looked around emphatically at the devotees seated before him on the floor. Anyone who has done something nice, auspicious thing, oh, it will never be vanquished. He will never be put into difficulty. It is such a nice thing. He ended his lecture and asked for questions. A young woman raised her hand. You say that people foolishly worship the photograph of someone who has already gone. You gave the example of George Washington or Gandhi. But can't the photo of a spiritual teacher be very helpful to teach others to love him? Prabhupada, yes, those who are spiritually advanced, they are not different from their photograph. Just like here is the statue of Krishna. He is not different from Krishna. The original person of Krishna and the statue of Krishna are the same. Just like we are chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna and the name of Krishna are non-different. Do you realize it? We are not getting some spiritual enlightenment by chanting. If we are not getting some spiritual enlightenment by chanting Hare Krishna, then do you think we are simply wasting our time? No, we are not wasting our time. We're actually getting spiritual ecstasy, because there is no difference. Similarly, a spiritually perfect person and his photograph is the same, because it is in the absolute stage. Is that clear? Okay, then I'll continue. Om Hare Krishna. Samaveta Bhaktivedanta Ki, Jainita Gaura Premanandi.